time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, stockist of Waiheke's largest range of local gifts, crafts and bric-a-brac. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oniroa. Last Saturday, Matthew Tetley-Jones talked to Ren Adderberg, local activist, and Rosalie from the Waiheke Library.
I've got with me now a man whose job is to make sure that we're all ready because he keeps bringing it to our attention. Good morning, Ren. How are you?
Good morning, Matthew.
So a call to all of us to get ready to see what's actually happening in the world. The flash mob outside Red Cross last Monday.
Yeah, it was fun. There were 1,000% more people than I expected. 1,000% more people turned up than I expected. I thought I would be standing there alone on my little soapbox, but, you know, about 10 to 12 people turned up, so it was really good.
Oh, that's good. So you didn't end up chalking a line around yourself?
No.
Because you can never do the last hand, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the old joke about the do-it-yourself crucifixion, you see.
Yeah.
But anyway, nobody actually died, but it was a graphic reminder of what could happen.
That was the whole idea that, you know, doing it outside the Red Cross, or, you know, if there would have been more people, I would have sent them to the fire brigade or the police station or community board meeting, the council building, just to show that, you know, with climate change happening, and it's only going to happen at a faster and bigger space, that it's going to affect, and it does affect us here on the island, as anywhere else in the world, and some places will be worse than maybe here, but still, I think we should be really prepared, and we should push our politicians much, much harder, because the shit is going to hit the fan at one stage, and as already we see slips and rising sea levels and changing seasons and possibly more hurricanes turning up on our doorsteps. And if something like that happens here on the island at the same time as in Auckland, who's going to help us? Who's prepared? Are we personally prepared at home? Are we are our emergency services up to speed to it? Especially if you have simultaneous events happening, like a few landslips and you can't get to Oniroa, or you can't go to the supermarket for a few days and the power is off. From how are we going to deal with that? Can we deal with it? Are we prepared for it? And so, especially also, you know, with slips and houses sliding down the hill, some of those houses here are pretty peculiar areas. So if anything happens like that in a few places all at once, then my gosh, you know, with one or two ambulances here on the island, and you need six, and the helicopters aren't flying because the weather is atrocious, and they can't get us by boat either, then my gosh, you know, are we thinking about that?
Yeah, are we ready? A few events in the Auckland region that I've noticed is, first of all, the half of Buckland's Beach is sort of falling down the cliff. The former mayor of Manukau, his house has been condemned, and people at this stage are worrying about the property damage, but it wouldn't take too much before there was actual human damage there. The other thing that I thought about is Kawakawa Bay was cut off by a landslip last year, and it was cut off for months, and the kids couldn't get to school, people couldn't get to work. That was on the mainland. How much more would we be isolated over here?
We are in a more difficult situation here. Just being a small island, small population, close to Auckland, but if it hits here, a tidal wave, another hurricane Bola, cyclone Bola, or anything similar like that, running together with spring tides, huge storm, we have to rely on ourselves. And if they're injured, then if we can't get them to hospital, you know, what is there to do? You know, we really have to think about it. We have to become more self-sufficient, think local and act local, but also push our local and our national and international politicians very, very hard. Like we just, what came out of Pittsburgh and the UN, even Barack Obama, who's I think is a wonderful president, he's still stymied and slowed down because of the political bullshit going on in the States by Congress and Senate. And there is not enough movement. Copenhagen is already pretty well written off the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference as not much will come out of it because there is not the political willpower there. Look at what the New Zealand government is doing. Yeah, let's open more coal mines. Whoopee! No, it's not the road to go. And it will just help to accelerate the processes of climate change. Or, you know, it's going to be irreversible if we don't watch out. And there is still time. And I like to think positive about it. And therefore, yeah, let's wake up. And let's act on it. And let's push a bit harder. We all have to push on this one. Because this is like another World War II, but just on a bigger scale.
Do you think there's a chance that people get sort of activism fatigue? Because thinking back there with your protest, it reminded me of what we used to do back in the 80s when the nuclear ships used to come in, and we used to all, I was a student at the time, we used to go down and protest outside the American embassy, and we'd, protesting against the nuclear threat, we'd all draw chalk marks around our bodies and stand there and chant things at the Americans. Nowadays, the nuclear threat has apparently subsided a bit. We've got, you know, good moves happening with the European missile shield being quashed.
Being canned, yeah.
So people have taken, you know, we've no longer got the military-industrial complex putting quite so much effort to building up nuclear arsenals, but still there are threats, and threats that we probably didn't rate that highly 25 years ago.
Yeah, the threats have, well, the nuclear threat is still there, you know, and it's not so much anymore on our doorsteps, like the Mururoa tests are finished, you know, there's no more nuclear tests as such, but there's still the countries like Iran, Korea, who, like, today just came out, Iran got another secret facility, so what are they really up to, you know, are they bullshitting, or are they generally trying to become a country with nuclear power for peaceful purposes? Those are all questions they need answering. Besides, there are countries like Israel who always deny they have nuclear arms and threatening to bomb Iran if need be. All the other countries, they're cutting back on those stuff. But that threat is still there. Seems a bit further off, and there's positive talks going on about cutting back the missiles and nuclear arms. But it's still not enough. That needs pushing as well, much, much harder. We need total nuclear disarmament, and total disarmament as far as I'm concerned, like change the weapon industry and put all those resources into fighting climate change.
But close down the coal mines and open up nuclear power stations, that's what some people say?
That's what some people say. Well, I don't really agree with that, because what are you going to do with the waste? Those things last 20, 30, you can maybe extend it to 40 or 50 years, but you still end up with a lot of waste. So, and that lasts forever, and you can't guarantee that. So, you know, there is research and work going on in that field, of course, to make it safer. There is the fission project is going on. Whatever comes out of that, a bit shaky for me as well. But then again, we got all those wonderful resources here. We got all this water. What about water turbines? You know, running and getting energy out of the currents. What about solar power? Maybe not today, but you know, that's wind power. And it doesn't all have to be on a large scale. It can be on a small scale. Just get some solar panels on your roof. That's what we need to ask the government for. You know, give us the subsidies. Not only a subsidy to help us to insulate our houses and all those good projects going on, warmer buildings and all that, but also for the power. Let's get rid of all those power lines and just get the solar powers and become more self-sufficient. That's what people have to think about, and if they can do it and afford it, act on it, go for it. And if you can't afford it, push the government, you know, just put your vote where your mouth is, and really think very, very hard about these issues, because it's gonna affect us all. And it may not affect me as much, you know, being a 60-year-old because of age, but it certainly will affect my kids, and my kids are concerned.
So speaking about the kids, I mean, there's a nice picture in the marketplace of a little boy getting a circle drawn around him, and it makes me think of the what we try to teach our children. We try to teach them to tidy up as they go along, you know, if they get their felt tips out or their crayons or whatever, they tidy up after them. Of course, the industry and the mining industry and the energy industry really doesn't follow that example, in that they leave the mess for everyone else to tidy up. We're still dealing with mines that were opened in the 1920s, and there's still toxic tailings coming down into the Firth of Thames there.
Yeah, that's an ongoing issue, of course, as well. You know, the pollution of the general pollution of the environment, which all those things are interlinked. Maybe nuclear or toxic waste, climate change, forestry, mining, all those things. There are two sides to it. Sure, the mining industry and the industrial complex are trying to clean up, and they're doing better than they did in the 20s and 30s. At that stage, they weren't really aware about the long-term effects. Now they are aware, we are aware. But they're also aware about, hey, coal mining, what does it do? You know, like, well, we know that burning coal isn't so good for the atmosphere. There is the push on from, hey, here in New Zealand, we shouldn't burn coal so much anymore. Phase out coal power stations and all that. And tell people not to burn coal at home in your little fireplace. But on the other hand, we are exporting it to China and to India and to France and to God knows where, who wants to buy the stuff. So,
and that's done in the national interest. But in fact, what's the national interest of the...
Yeah, we have to get rid of this whole national interest thing a bit. You know, we have to change our attitude, not just chuck it all out. You know, we can't. Sure, we have to protect the good side of it, the positive side for it. But we also have to think globally, you know, in that respect, not only locally from what can we do here at home, but also globally. It's not just little New Zealand is isolated and 50 years behind the rest of the world. No, we are right there, right smack in the middle. And that could be our contribution from, say, hey, you know, we're going to cut back drastically on this coal mining stuff, or exporting of certain items which are a bit dicey, or the processes to make products are not really hunky-dory. If we want to keep this clean green image, which is already, soiled, from, hey, we have to get our act together on that as well. And that is, there's industry in there, there's business in there, there's money in there. You know, if people want to talk about economy, there is an alternative to those things. And it doesn't mean we have to get more and more unemployment and things. We have to also keep in mind the overall picture. How is the world going to look like in 10, 20, 30, 50 years' time?
And what's the point of consuming more? How much internet do you really need? How many movies do you need to download a day?
That's correct, you know. Just what other little things we can do? Instead of downloading and watching an extra movie, hey, just go to those websites from a Greenpeace or a Ticker Ticker Tick or Avaaz, and check them out, and all of them have little petitions going, lobbying politicians, and it just takes a couple of minutes to put your name there, and it seems totally insignificant. But if politicians, you know, if you check out those websites and you see some of those results and the reactions from politicians in countries, then, hey, you can make a difference. We can make a difference. And even if you don't care about it for yourself, care about it for your kids.
Well, that's a call to action there. That's Rene Uchtenberg. He's a environmental activist and a jam maker. Back to the jam pot now, are you?
Yeah. I had some, not loquats. That's coming up.
I mean, yeah, the loquats.
Loquat jelly and loquat chutney, really nice. But at the moment, I'm doing making some plum jam. Plum.
They're out of the freezer, eh?
Not out of the freezer, no. I preserved them, cut them in jars.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, because freezer uses a lot of power.
You're right. You've got to look at everything, don't you? You've got to look at the carbon footprint even of your frozen plums.
Yeah, so I just came back from the dump
and
picked up some more jars.
And those are, I mean, that's fruit grown on Waiheke.
it's all local fruit, and I always check out good people's gardens, you know, from friends and family or neighbors, and as long as I don't use any spray, I'm happy to go and pick it up.
And the great thing about plum trees is the older they get, the better they get.
Oh, they're yummy. Yeah. Mine are about 40 years old or something.
One worry about the plum trees, actually, is the bees. There are no longer nearly so many bees around to pollinate.
I've noticed that too, but there seem to be more bumblebees. And
yeah.
They do the same trick too.
They can do. They're actually...
Yeah, we have to look after our bees.
Yeah. Well, it's just the thing, you know, there's
no
a little
spraying.
Thing
spraying.
Like, yeah. Yep. Okay, then, thanks a lot, Ren. And
hey, you're welcome, and everybody have a good weekend.
And keep you'll see things come up from time to time. Ren organised the flash mob outside the Red Cross to protest against the environmental degradation.
By the way, just a quick hop in, just people keep in mind, and it's in the Gulf News and in the Marketplace on the 24th of October is another thing happening with regard to climate change, and the school kids are involved. Yuppie!
Thanks for that. See you, Ren.
Cheers.
Rosalie's here from the library. Good morning, Rosalie.
Good morning, Matthew, and good morning, all the wonderful Waihikians. Well, it's a bit of a damp start to the school holidays, but the library is buzzing. Now, remember, on Wednesday, if you're between 5 and 12, or you've got family between 5 and 12, grandchildren perhaps over and visiting, the library always has this very special school activity or out-of-school activity. And this time it's called Fabulous Fairies and Awesome Aliens. So there'll be competitions, there'll be face painting, there's all sorts of wonderful treasure hunts. So come into the library, get some of the brochures which give you little activities to amuse yourself with in the holidays, and be there 11 o'clock on Wednesday. Of course, we're still having our story time for the preschoolers on Tuesday and Thursday at 10 o'clock. Now, I was thinking too, a lot of people go travelling in the holidays, and we've got a whole pile of new books in Matthew's, and so amongst them is Toot Sweet, and I loaned this to, suggested one of our regular patrons who was a great traveller in her youth, read it, and she came back in a few days later and said, oh, it's a hoot. So Toot Sweet, Hanging Up My High Heels for a New Life in France. So I have read that, quite fun, very light. A woman journalist who's makes a great career as a fashion journalist, and so she's got all this marvellous Prada and you name it, you know, wardrobe. And of course then she starts buying this decrepit cottage and gradually doing it up and living in one room, and of course all her clothes are totally unsuitable, but quite fun.
So it's by Karen Wheeler,
and it's called Toot Sweet, T-O-U-T Sweet. Now, Chris Stewart, I picked this up and I thought, oh yes, Driving Over Lemons, that was a wonderful book set in Spain.
Oh, he was the drummer from Genesis, wasn't he?
That's it. Now,
no, not the drummer, that was Phil Collins. He was the thingy from, the guy you don't remember from Genesis.
Yes, well, he's also known for Driving Over Lemons, and this is in an earlier life, Three Ways to Capsize a Boat, and underneath that it's called An Optimist Afloat, and I can only say, keep him away from the Gulf. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. A friend of his said, oh, look, can you help my aunt and uncle? They've got this yacht, and they like somebody to skipper it, and I've nominated you. And he said, oh, great. The only trouble was he'd never even sailed a dinghy before.
The sort of time you'd go down to the library and get the How to Sail book out.
Exactly,
wouldn't you?
He did. He did do that. But then he ended up to be a natural at it, and he did a sailing course I was very pleased to see. And went to the Mediterranean and absolutely fell in love with boats. Now, when he went back to England, he met up with the tutor of the sailing course, and he was invited to go on this Viking track over to North America in the small boat. So this is actually three ways to... So it sort of tells his sailing progress.
Crikey, that to, over to North America, by the way, the Viking, that's not for the faint-hearted.
No.
It's a bit more than just cruising the Med.
Yes, it's very different. And his descriptions of the big waves and the storms and whether they were going to survive the day and the night and the next day, you know, were absolutely brilliant. So for sailors or anyone thinking of boating, three ways to capsize a boat by Chris Stewart. He actually makes the big storm sound funny, but that's very much in retrospect.
Right.
So, also talking about travel books, we've got New Lonely Planets, and of course, there's also the Eyewitness Guides. They're, I think, very, very good, and they're often not known the way Foda's and Lonely Planets are.
Yeah.
They've got so many of them are done about major cities, like say you're going to Paris or you're going to London, pick up one of these books and it'll give you just about everything. And it's in colour too, really good little mini thumbnail pictures. So I highly recommend that. And a couple of other travellers have, older travellers especially, have recommended them to me too.
Well, it's always good if you're planning a trip overseas to get a bit of background information.
Oh, indeed.
And up-to-date background information, because you know, you sometimes hear from somebody who's been to a place 20 years ago and they say, oh, check out this particular place, you go there, not there.
Yes.
Or it's all changed.
Yes, it's indeed. Now, the final travel one I'd like to mention is one I haven't quite finished yet. It's a more demanding read, and it's Wisdom of Donkeys. And, of course, I picked it up and I thought, I read a book about riding with a donkey or a donkey in the savants, and I thought it was Robert Louis Stevenson, and it was Travel with a Donkey in the Savants. And I loved that when I was at boarding school, and I thought, well, that's really good. And now this is a modern day version of it, about a chap who gives up his very busy life and just decides there's got to be more to life than that, and he falls in love with a donkey. And so he and the donkey set off traveling. So it's it did remind me a lot, because it is called Wisdom of Donkeys. So it's, if you've ever read Travels with a Donkey and you loved it, then look for this Wisdom of Donkeys at the library. I should have it back in a couple of days. Now, a new book. We've got a lot of What's Hots, and one of the latest What's Hots, but we also have them on request too, is Dick Francis and Felix Francis, Even Money. So this is nothing to do with travelling, it's just to do with racing, and it's actually bookkeeping. Even Money, Dick Francis and Felix Francis, and I think it's one of the best ever. So there you are, because I've always loved his galloping books. This one's got far more depth of character, a bookie whose wife is institutionalised, and he's in love with his wife, and she just has these manic depressives. So it's a slice of life that's a wee bit different from his normal books, and I think he carries it off with great compassion and understanding.
Dick Francis has been writing for many years now.
Oh,
I can remember his books back in the 70s, I think.
Yes.
Felix Francis, that's his son. Is it?
It's his son, yes. Right. And I think between the two of them, they're hitting a slightly different... There's still the horses there in the background, but they're bringing in much deeper characterizations. And this, I really thought, was quite something. So that's Dick Francis and Felix Francis, Even Money.
Okay, then.
Yes, so people who hadn't read Dick Francis before, I think they might really find this.
Well, I must say, I'm not a big racing fan, but I've always found Dick Francis's novels cracking good mysteries, you know. Always good stuff. And sadly enough, through the course, there's been a murder in the racing industry just last week.
Oh, that's
down
right.
Down in Matamata.
So this is quite topical. Sorry.
I actually saw the front page of the paper and I thought, crikey, it's something out of a Dick Francis book.
Well, I must admit, I thought that too, especially as I just finished it and brought it back to the library, and I thought, oh, dear.
There you go. Life imitates art. Art imitates life.
Yes.
Well, I've got a track now. This one is a classic reggae track, actually. It's called Ride My Donkey.
You've got a donkey. Right. Just before I go, I'd love to say, during October, we'll be having Sonata for Miriam, which is our One Island, One Book, New Zealand Book Month choice.
Oh, yes.
And it's been recorded by these marvellous people on Waiheke. And thanks to a great technician supplied by Radio Waiheke, John Panther has done a brilliant job. So do be listening 11:40 a.m. in October for Sonata for Miriam.
And October's Book Month, is it?
New Zealand Book Month.
New Zealand Book Month. Yes, so this is great.
It is a big effort by a lot of people, but especially John.
And the entire book's been serialised.
Exactly.
And it'll be played all over the month at
11:40.
Oh, great. Mm. Excellent.
Yes. You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.